ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। After the Bhagavatam class, we're going to discuss more about japa today. And Vaisheshika Prabhu has some topics he wants to present.
It's the next one, because we discussed manu last five. If you can finally move the red marker along
okay.
to 56.
Okay.
Isn't 55 or is it 56?
It is, but he's moving it to 56.
Yeah, or however, wherever we end up.
We're just thinking ahead.
We might just finish the chapter here, I think. Okay. It's all verses.
In which case, we're all out of book.
Yeah, this is the end of our first volume.
So, how long do you want to go till? Till leave time for some talk.
How about 6 minutes to go?
Okay. So, verse 55 then, right? Sutta uvacha, sutta uvacha, Arjuna, sahasagaya, Arjuna sahasagaya, Hare, Hardam, Atasina. Harer Hardam Atasinam Manim Jahara Murdayam Manim Jahara Murdanyam
Manim Jahara
Dvijasya Saha Murdajam Dvijasya saha murdajam Sutuvacha Arjuna sahasa gaya Harir hardam atasina Manim jahara murdanyam Dvijasya saha murdajam.
Sutta vacha. Arjuna
sahasadhyaya.
Arjuna sahasadhyaya.
Harir hardam atasina.
Harir hardam atasina.
Manim jahara murdhanyam.
Manim jahara murdhanyam.
Dvijasya saha murdajam.
Dvijasya saha murdajam.
Sutta uvacha,
Arjuna sahasagyaya,
Harer hardam
atasina, Harer hardam atasina,
Manim jahara murdhanyam,
Manim jahara murdhanyam,
Vijasya saha murdhajam,
Vijasya saha murdhajam,
Sutta
uvacha,
Arjuna
sahasagnaya Manim jahara murdhanyam
Vijasya
saha murdhajam
Sutta uvacha
Arjuna sahasagnaya
Arjuna sahasagyaya
Harer hardam
athasina
Vijahamurdhanyam
Vijasya Samurdhajam
Vijasya Samurdhajam
Sutta Vacha
Arjuna Sasajnaya
Harehadam Atasina
Maninjahar Murdhanyam
Vijasya Sahamurdhajam
Sutta Uvacha
Arjuna Sasajnaya
Harehadam Atasina
Maninjahar Murdhanyam
Sutta Goswami
Uvacha
said
Arjuna
Sahasa
just at that time
Agaya
knowing it
Hare
of the Lord
Hardyam,
motive.
Ata,
thus.
Asina,
by the sword.
Manim,
the jewel.
Jahara,
separated.
Murdanyam,
on the head.
Dvijasya,
of the twice born.
Saha,
with.
Murdajam,
hairs.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Just then Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord by His equivocal orders. And thus, with His sword, He severed both hair and jewel from the head of Ashwatthama. Please repeat. Just then Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord. By His equivocal orders. And thus with His sword,
He severed both hair and jewel
from the head of Ashwatthama. Purport. Contradictory orders of different persons are impossible to carry out. Therefore, a compromise was selected by Arjuna by his sharp intelligence, and he separated the jewel from the head of Ashwatthama. This was as good as cutting off his head. And yet, his life was saved for all practical purposes. Here, Ashwatthama is indicated as twice born. Certainly, he was twice born. But he fell down from his position, and therefore, he was properly punished. So, who's speaking in this verse? Sutta. Sutta the Goswami speaking, and who's he speaking to? Shaunaka and the sages at Naimasharanya. Okay. And so he's relating the story of how the Pandavas are going to deal with Ashwatthama. And of course, Ashwatthama, he killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. And initially, especially Arjuna and Krishna and Bhima, they wanted revenge. Right? And they wanted to make sure that Ashwatthama was killed. And Ashwatthama, because he was an aggressor, he was fit to be killed. I think in the Manu Samhita there's five kinds of aggressors, right? Five? You know what they are? Six?
Six. Huh?
What are they?
Those who give poison, and those who attack with deadly weapons, and those who disrobe for any wives, and like attacking to the wife and the daughter. And the fourth one is those who steal the properties or by illegal means and
burn the house.
Burn the house.
Set fire.
Set fire.
That he told. That's five. Okay, poison and fire, that's two.
We got five.
Stealing a wife, attacking with weapons. Take the land, property, he said. So that's five. Well, at least we got five. So someone who does these things, technically speaking, you could kill them and there'd be no sinful reaction for that, right, in the Vedic culture. If you do that in our culture, you might end up going to jail or having some charge. A few years back, there was a Japanese boy, and he was new to America. He was going to school. He was in Florida. And it was Halloween. And, of course, you know, on Halloween in America, they do trick-or-treat, going house to house. So he was dressed up in a costume, going door to door. And he banged on someone's door, and the person opened the door and shot him and killed him. This was big news in Japan. It wouldn't even make the news in America. No one would even hear about it. But it was big news in Japan. And, of course, the Japanese, they have a certain impression of Americans that are very aggressive and violent. And they are, actually. So he was killed. And what do you think happened to the person who shot him? Nothing. Because if someone attacks you, or if you think someone's, of course, this we're getting into the legal area here, but if you think someone's going to cause you bodily harm and they're on your property, you have a legal right to shoot them. Is that right? Or kill them? Or defend yourself.
Not so much that you have a right, but that you don't have the guilty mind, which is required before the state can punish you. You have to not only do a guilty act, but you also have to have a guilty state of mind. Therefore, if you're so insane, for example, that you can't tell what you're doing or you can't distinguish right from wrong, you can be found not guilty by reason of insanity. Similarly, if you do have a right to protect your property and things, but you may be provoked. And, for example, if you're in the middle of a fight and you kill somebody and you, there's not cold blood, it might reduce murder to manslaughter, you know, or it might, you're provoked somehow to anger.
What if someone has entered your property?
There's not a blanket protection that any time someone is trespassing on your property, you can kill them.
Yeah.
But if you believe that they're attacking you or for self-defense, there's a defense called necessity. If you feel that the only way you can protect your life or the life of your family is by killing someone, and if that's a justified belief, that can be a basis for being acquitted. I mean, it's not that the prosecutor won't try to say, "Oh, it was unreasonable for you to think that," you know, and try to get you convicted of at least manslaughter or second degree murder or something.
And of course, states have different laws too, is right? Now in this case, I actually think that the boy actually turned and ran away and was shot in the back. It was still on the property, however. And somehow or other, this man was acquitted.
What state was it?
Florida.
I thought he entered the house.
Oh, he entered the house? Oh, you heard the story?
Yeah, it was in the news. He went in, somehow or other, he walked in the house. He didn't know exactly how the whole trick-or-treat thing worked. And I think other people were there, and then he just kept walking in.
Anyway, back to the point. Thank you. Asvatthama was an aggressor. And of course, then we were reading that Draupadi, she had compassion upon him. Especially she had compassion for Asvatthama's mother. What was her name?
Creepy.
And she didn't want her to suffer the way she had suffered. And so there was this dilemma that Krishna and Bhima are saying, kill him right now. And Draupadi's saying, wait a minute, he's the son of a Brahmin. We don't want to kill him. I don't want him to suffer. And so Arjuna was in a dilemma what to do. And then Krishna somehow, and by Krishna's facial expressions, Arjuna could understand what the solution was to kill him, but not to kill him. And so this was accomplished by cutting the jewel and cutting his hair. I don't know much about the jewel and the hair and what that signifies. Do you?
Well, it was a sign of a Brahmin, and apparently someone said last week that he was born with that jewel.
Yeah. We had class last week.
2 weeks.
So he was born with that jewel. A significant point that Prabhupada makes at the end here, he says, he certainly was twice born, but he fell down from his position, and therefore he was properly punished. So Aswatthama was twice born, meaning he was not only born in the family of a Brahmin, but he was initiated, and I guess apparently was acting like a Brahmin up to this point. But then he fell down. And so if one can't maintain his spiritual position, then he's considered fallen.
I have the six aggressors here.
Oh, really?
And they were right. Someone said, okay, let me just read them. A poison giver, one who sets fire to the house, one who attacks with deadly weapons, one who plunders riches, one who occupies another land.
Oh, okay.
So land and riches are two different things. And one who kidnaps a wife. All six of those are aggressors, and they are at once to be killed, and no sin is incurred by killing such aggressors.
Hmm. And where's that quoted from?
This is from the purport to the
136.
Yeah, for the first chapter, verse 36.
Oh, thanks. Thank you very much. So he was a bona fide aggressor. Because he attacked sleeping children with weapons and murdered them. And therefore, and also he was also fallen because he wasn't acting according to Dharma. And at one time he was twice born. And so it's not that one can just be born into a family of a Brahmin and be considered a Brahmin. And just like one cannot be born into the family of a high court judge or a surgeon, be considered a judge or a doctor, one has to earn those qualifications. And then if he doesn't maintain the standard, then he also may be fired, or his license may be revoked. And the same goes in spiritual life. So everyone, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and the disciplic succession, can receive their second birth, or become twice born. There's a verse in the, I think it's in the Bhakti Sandarbha. Let's see, maybe I can look it up here. Where Jiva Goswami explains what is initiation, and what does it mean to become twice born? What is that process, and why is it necessary? So let me look at it real quick. Do you know the verse? Divya Gyanam. Divya Gyanam. I noticed the books weren't passed out today. We can't find them, right?
No, we haven't.
Divya Gyanam.
Yeah, so it starts with Divya Gyanam.
And do you know the translation? 402. Should I read it? Okay. Divya Gyanam Yato Dadyat Kuryat Prapasya Sankshayam Tasman Diksheti Sa Prokta Deshikais Tatvakovidai. Diksha is the process by which one awakens his transcendental knowledge and vanquishes all reactions caused by sinful activity. A person expert in the study of the revealed scriptures knows this process as diksha. And so, Aswatthama had received diksha, and we also go through the process of diksha. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's also talked about this in his, he wrote an essay called Panchasamskara, which we've talked about before, and he says that the conditioned soul, actually the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, jiva swarupaya Krishna nityadas, Krishna tatasta shakti beta beta prakas. The identity of the soul is he's the eternal servant of Krishna, but when and he's the marginal energy of the Lord. That's his eternal position. And so, but when the soul comes to this world, that desire to serve Krishna becomes perverted, and one becomes Krishna's competitor. There's another verse that describes that in the 11th canto, Bhayam Dvitiya Minivesatashad. He becomes full of fear, and Dvitiya means he thinks that everything is different from Krishna, just like Krishna was telling Lord Brahma in those Chatur Sloki verses, that if you see anything different or set as different from me in this material world, you should know that that's Maya, that's my external energy. And so this is our perversion. Somehow we come into this world and this our condition becomes perverted. So there has to be some process of rectification. And so this rectification process is really the diksha. And of course, we say that it's said that anyone can chant Hare Krishna, and anyone can be rectified by this process of simply chanting Hare Krishna. It says even if one is chants offenselessly in the Padma Purana, that if one continues chanting, he'll overcome the 10 offenses. But it's a very difficult task because of our identification with Maya and our strong attachment to the material energy. It's so very, very powerful that we need all the help we can get. And so, therefore, the acharyas recommend the diksha process as well, and the worship of the deity. And so it's said that at diksha, one's transcendental knowledge gets awakened, and one's reactions to sinful activities become vanquished. So one of the reasons that we're absorbed in Maya and attached is because of all the sinful activities we've done in the past. All the repetition. By association, we develop attachment, right? By contemplation, there's attachment. And then there's actual action, you know. One develops lust, from attachment, lust. And in this way, through repetition, we become very much attached to matter. So it's not easy to separate ourselves. And so within our consciousness, our karma, you could say, all our happiness and distress is little pictures, little vrittis there sitting in our mind. And these pictures are constantly coming up. Prabhupada talks in one purport, I think it's in the Upadeshamrita, he says that these vrittis, they're not only there from this life, they're there from last life too. And they're, by association, they just keep coming up again and again and again. So it's very difficult to overcome this. But diksha helps us overcome this. Helps us overcome sin and these reactions. So practically speaking, how does that occur? And, of course, there's the mystical process of diksha that goes on, that one gets the divine mercy of the Lord. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratya mame vidye papajante mayametan turantite. That And when we accept a spiritual master, when we accept Diksha, we're surrendering to Krishna through the Guru. And there's some reciprocation from Krishna and from all the whole disciplic succession. We get some mercy for that. So you could say that's the mystical side of it. But there's also the practical side of it. Just like when Prabhupada was personally initiating his disciples, one by one, they would go up to the Vyasasan and they would get their japa beads from Srila Prabhupada. And then he would ask them a question. What was the question? Huh? Yeah, he'd say, "What are the four rules and regulations?" And they would say, "No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating," and to chant 16 rounds. Four negatives, then one positive. And one will have to make this commitment for their whole life. So it's very, very practical, you know, that we have all these ritis in our mind saying, have illicit sex, go gamble, eat meat, take some intoxication. And the spiritual master is saying, you can't do that anymore. You have to, now I'm giving you this code to live by. So it's very practical. You know, that by following the four regulated principles, that one is overcoming. He's no longer engaging in sinful activities. The activities that are keeping us in material consciousness and causing us to take birth life after life after life. So it is very practical. And then the positive, to chant 16 rounds. Because we're always absorbed in something. We can't turn off the senses. And the senses are, literally they are holes, but they are vectors for, for the material energy to influence us. You know, the pictures are coming in through the eyes, sounds are coming in through the ears, smells are coming in through the nose. Tastes are coming in through the mouth, sensations coming through touch. They're all making some impression on the mind. And throughout the day, mostly these impressions are in association with material energy. They apparently seem disconnected from Krishna if you're in the bodily conception of life. Unless we're learning to train and yukta vairagya, use everything in Krishna's service. So the spiritual master, he engages us in the worship of the deity and in the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. 16 rounds at least takes up 10% of the day. The other 90%, there may still be some absorption, in the material. But at least 16 rounds, at least for 2 hours, plus three gayatris, and if you're a slow chanter like I am, then more like 2.5 hours chanting and three gayatris. You got 3 hours there out of 24. And of course, part of that time there's some sleeping and there's some spacing out going on. So, if lucky, 3 hours. But it's something that's exclusively there for Krishna, putting the attention on Krishna. Most of the time, the attention is absorbed in the material energy. And so it's very practical. You follow the four regulated principles, chant 16 rounds, and then naturally, to a certain degree, transcendental knowledge is awakened. Just like we were saying before. Before, we didn't know what Maya was. We couldn't even make any distinction. Even to understand our fallen condition, even though we may not be able to follow properly, the fact that we know that is actually something. There has to be some transcendental knowledge gained in order even to be able to make that distinction. And so the process of Diksha means to awaken. Two things happen. We awaken transcendental knowledge and we become gradually freed from sinful activities. And actually, the body changes. The physical body changes, and the subtle body especially changes. And so we actually become freed. And sometimes it's not so obvious in the physical body. So when one becomes twice born, one is said to have the sadaka deha, or the practicing body. So it's no longer considered a material body. Now we're using this body and mind in the service of Krishna in practice, or we're doing vaidhi bhakti. But by that practice, gradually we go through the different stages till we get to bhava, and ashakti and bhava, and then the spiritual body begins to awaken. And so one may not be able to see this, but there are, you know, externally, but there are some signs and symptoms. And there's that nice verse that Lord Chaitanya quotes to Prakasananda Saraswati. When Prakasananda Saraswati, he said to Lord Chaitanya, you know, why aren't you studying Vedanta? Why are you dancing like a madman, like some sentimentalist in the street? You should at least have some Vedanta knowledge and be a sober, you know, sannyasi. And then Lord Chaitanya said, well, my spiritual master told me that I was a fool, that I couldn't understand Vedanta, and he gave me this Hare Krishna mantra to chant. But when I started to chant it, I started to cry and dance and shout like a madman. And I was a little worried, thinking, wow, what has happened to me? And so again, he went back to his spiritual master and said, you know, Master, when I chant Hare Krishna, sometimes I cry, and sometimes I laugh, and sometimes I can't control myself from dancing around like a crazy person. Now, what's happening to me? And Lord Chaitanya said that when Iswara Puri heard this, he became very, very happy. And then Lord Chaitanya said that at this point, my spiritual master, he taught me the most important verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is in the 11th canto. And I'm just learning the verse. Let me see if I can say it. Bear with me here. It's Avam. No. Avam vrata sa priya namakirtya jatanu raga druti chita uchai. Let's see. Hasati ato. Roditi rauti gayati unmaravan nityati lokabaya. So it says that when one takes up the chanting of the Hare Krishna with this vow, then eventually, gradually, he develops attachment. Jatanurago means gradual attachment. And once one has that attachment, then loudly, sometimes he laughs, sometimes he dances, sometimes he cries, and just like a madman, he's dancing. And even though he's experiencing these symptoms, he doesn't care for any public opinion. You know, he's not influenced by that, but he freely exhibits these symptoms. And so Lord Chaitanya said this is actually the most important verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so basically this is what we're doing. We're taking up a vow to chant the Hare Krishna mantra. If we chant it, and we continue to chant, even though we make offenses, gradually it will melt our hearts. And then these symptoms will manifest. Now Madhvacharya, which is mentioned in the purport, he quotes on this verse. And he says that sometimes advanced devotees, even though they're feeling these symptoms, they don't manifest them. And so it's not that if, like sometimes people used to see Srila Prabhupada, and they'd see pictures of him, or they'd see him and they'd say, Well, he doesn't look very happy. The Prabhupada was very, very sober, you know. And there were a few times where, you know, these symptoms slipped out, you know, that he just became so overwhelmed. But generally speaking, devotees, even if they're feeling these symptoms, they don't exhibit them, especially in public. Even Lord Chaitanya sometimes, you know, would try, and if he was in the company of non-devotees, he would have to make an effort to get these symptoms under control. But Madhavacharya says anyway, he says that this isn't how you should really be looking to understand who's an advanced devotee. They may or may not be exhibiting these symptoms, but he said there are two things you can see within a devotee that will tell you that they're on this stage or at least approaching this stage. And one is that they're very, very steady in their devotion to the Lord and in their practice. And two, that their sound vibration is very merciful, that in their association, in their words, we feel inspiration. We feel like, yeah, I can do that too. Yes, I want to become a devotee. I want to try and do this. And we feel uplifted, and we feel encouraged. We feel valued in their association. By their sound vibration. And so, in this way, we can see that a person's heart is melting. And when the heart is hard, we talked about this before, when the heart is closed, then there's no emotion flowing, even in our relationships with each other. Right? If there's some anger there, or there's some hurt feelings, or some shame, then the heart closes up and we can't have the normal exchange that we would want to have with someone, right, until the heart opens again. And the same is with the holy name. We've come to this world, well, our heart is open to Maya, but it's closed to Krishna. And so we chant his name and we don't feel spontaneous attraction. Well, we have to stop soon. But actually, it's a good point to start on. We don't feel spontaneous attraction for Krishna. Yet we've taken this vow to chant 16 rounds. Or whatever vow we've taken. It's important to take a vow, even if it's one round. If we take a vow to chant one round with full attention, we'll make progress. And so we have to forcibly fix our attention upon Krishna. And this is some... what we want to talk about now, actually, is that in this process of chanting japa, where japa means you take a vow to chant, and even though our attention wants to go to other places, we say that for this amount of time, mind, you're going to listen to the holy name of the Lord, whatever that time is, one round, 16 rounds, 20 rounds. And then, so... because we don't have spontaneous attraction, we have to do things in order to fix our attention upon the Lord in his holy name. If we don't do that, then even if we're chanting, our attention wanders. And we're inattentive when we're chanting, so we're committing the, you know, one of the 10 offenses, and because we're in a semi-concentrated state, if we begin to meditate on the material desires and thoughts that we normally have throughout the day, that are always creeping in there, if we're doing that while we're chanting, actually, those things can even become stronger. Yeah. Because whatever we put our attention into, it gets energized. Right? So we're chanting Hare Krishna at the same time we're thinking... whatever our attachments are. If we're thinking about those things, we're putting concentrated energy into those thought forms. So it's especially important when we're chanting japa to create the right circumstance so that we can have the most effective attention. So Vaisheshika Prabhu, I'll turn it over to you now.
Okay, Master, can you put the board up?
So we've read one verse today. Next verse, we should have read all the verses, but because there's no purports after this.
Saving it so we don't run out of books.
Okay. So next is 56.
We'll just comment on those for a couple months.
Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Okay, if you'll write up there the two words, put determination okay. And about 3/4 of the way down. Much farther down. Keep going, all the way. 3/4. Further, further, further. Okay, a little more. There, put effort. Okay. Now, and then stand by with another color. So, I wanted to read this section of Prabhupada's instructions on chanting japa. And he wrote to a devotee that he said, regarding your last question about the ecstatic symptoms of chanting Hare Krishna, you should know that the Hare Krishna mantra has an equal effect upon all devotees. Just like the sunshine has an equal effect on everyone, but when it is covered, the sunshine has a different effect. Similarly, the influence of the Hare Krishna mantra becomes manifest when one is no longer covered by the 10 offenses to chanting. The more we become free from the 10 offenses, the more the effect of chanting becomes manifested through us. Everyone can become a great devotee, being freed from the offenses 100%, simply by one's determination and effort. So I thought this was a nice point for meditation for the next few days. And just that the holy name's like the sun. And the sun is an equal opportunity giver. You know, and sometimes Prabhupada explains how people close themselves in their room and they close all the shades and then they don't get the benefit of the sun. And then they complain and say, well, didn't do anything for me. So, but the problem isn't with the sun. The problem is with our relationship to the sun and how we're cutting ourselves off from it. So similarly, the holy name is like the sun. And what blocks us from getting the full benefit of that is the offenses that we commit while chanting the holy name. So it doesn't fully come through. It has a different effect, actually. As Satyadev Prabhu was just speaking about, if we're meditating on our desires and so on and concentrating on those, we'll get a different effect. It just like if you have a garden and you go around and you water the weeds, it'll have your garden will look a lot different from somebody who puts the time and effort into watering the plants and pulling out the weeds. But being a gardener myself, I know it's very it takes a lot of determination and a lot of effort to pull out weeds. And so I just wanted to get three under each one of these headings, determination and effort, what you think we can agree on are the top three things we can do this week in a determined way and what kind of effort we can make so that our chanting becomes less covered by the offenses and more focused on pleasing Krishna. So any suggestions for determination? Just briefly, we'll talk about determination and come up with a few items. For instance, how does one become more determined and what does it feel like to be determined? Any comments on that? Karuna.
In the discussion determination in the Bhagavad Gita in one purport, Srila Prabhupada tells the story about the sparrow who laid her eggs near the shore of the ocean and the ocean stole the eggs. So the sparrow asked the ocean to give the egg back, but the ocean wasn't paying attention, so she started taking a little beak full of water from the ocean. And in this way, she was determined that by taking one beak full at a time, she eventually would go to the ocean and get her eggs back. And then her cousin bird, Garuda, came by, feeling compassion on another bird. And he told the ocean, you better give the eggs back or I'm going to start. doing what she's doing too. So then the ocean got serious and gave the eggs back.
That's really nice. So if you could put that into a sutra that we can think about, how we'll use that for determination, what would be the basic principle of being of determination that we could use?
Goal.
What is it?
Goal.
Goal?
Set a goal.
Set a goal, okay. All right, set a goal. Put goal, set a colon, set a goal, and follow through. That'll work.
The sparrow had a goal of getting eggs back.
Okay.
What's the goal for that?
So the goal is chanting there, chanting the sparrow up around.
Yeah, and to speak to
it. Nice. It's good in the sense that, like Satyadeva Prabhu was saying during the seminar, that it almost seems like those endless desires and hankerings will never stop. And so what's the use? Why fight it? But we have to be like that little bird, actually, and say, one by one, no matter what, I'm going to move them out of the way or not be affected by them and keep coming back to the mantra every time. Did you come up with a sutra for us? Akurnath? I want an Akurnath sutra.
But one thing that I'm thinking about the bird was, in spite of the impossibility, you know, it seems like how is she going to drain the whole ocean with her little beak? But in spite of the seeming impossibility, you know, she just she didn't consider nothing. She couldn't be deterred. She couldn't be deterred by anything. Her strong determination that she was just going to do it without, even if people laugh or. But it's this a sutra. Is
never give up.
Under any circumstance. Yeah,
never give up. And what would you say, Ramaswamy?
If you are determined, the destiny is going to also.
Something else will come into play.
Yeah.
Well, how about never give up is another thing.
Yep.
That's just some part of determination, and then. You can expect help from a higher power, really. I guess that's the lesson from the story. It's like, if we're going to remain determined, if we know the cavalry's coming, it's a lot easier to know. You know what the cavalry is, right? Like, if you know help is coming also, and you're thinking like that, you think, well, I'm going to go on and go on, and I'm going to, not that we try to see God, but we try to act in such a way that God will see us. So if we have that determined nature, we have this feeling that Krishna will come and help us. He'll give us some mercy. Okay, well, just, yes.
Once you have a determination, you don't have to recalculate anymore. You know, The determination is that it's already been determined. And now you're going to do it no matter what. People may come and give arguments and against you or something. But you're so, you know, sometimes they say stubbornly determined, but... Once you're determined, if you're determined to do the right thing, chant 16 good rounds, then it's no longer open for debate. That well, maybe it's better to get a good night's sleep now, and you can chant some extra tomorrow. Or nobody can. There's no room for any arguments anymore. There's determination.
So you got a sutra yet?
No.
Do or die.
And you know, Prabhupada is that one that leads to one thing, that if there is a will, there is a way.
Where there's a will, there's a way. That's a good one. Put that down. Where there's a will, there's a way. That, because that's a fact. Where there's a will, there's a way. Yes? Yes, Milan.
So Prabhupada, I wanted to know, sometimes I set goal or I become very determined, but then for a period of time, everything, you know, comes down. Right? Or how do I, you know, stay focused on the goal? I mean, setting a goal is very easy. I'll after this lecture I'll set up a chant. I mean, you know, chant better, but then, you know, like a soda bottle, it all comes down very fast. How do I stay
I just got it. Sorry, I'm a little slow. That's good. Well, that's where we're going to come into the effort part of it. Okay, well, who has... Yes, yes. He have a sutra, and then we have some responses to that. Rakshit has one.
Dridhavrata.
Dridhavrata. Okay.
Unshakable vow.
Unshakable vow. Okay, put unshakable vow.
Unshakable vow. Vow.
And Rakshit, Prabhu, you had some advice?
Part of determination would have to be practice. Practice in the sense, and persisting with doing that. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna had posed this question to Krishna, that my mind, the mind is very restless. It wanders away. What is to be done? And Krishna gives an answer that, it is restless, but with practice and detachment, I guess, and he mentioned two things, you can bring it under control.
So under effort, put practice and detachment. And you know, one thing, Milan, that I've experienced is that the reason that I'll go down like a soda bottle is because sometimes it seems overwhelming, and then the mind becomes... discouraged, you know, that you think like, oh, it's too much, I can't do it. It's like if you think about writing a book, and if you, like, I'm writing a book right now, and when at first when I started writing the book, I'd sit down and think, I can't write a book, who are you to write a book? And I couldn't write a book, and then I read a bit of advice from a newsletter, and it said, don't try to write a book. It said, just try to concentrate on one tiny subject at a time, and then concentrate on that and write something about it, and then later on, organize those subjects and put them together. And so sometimes when we think about chanting 16 rounds or think about chanting one round and overcoming the mind, or even think about sitting down or picking up our beads, the beads can weigh 50 pounds, it seems like sometimes. You know, it just, we become so overcome. So there's one aphorism Prabhupada used to say, and that is drops a day wear stone away. And what can really help in an endeavor that seems overwhelming is to break it down into tiny parts, like we did the other night. You have one thread, right? And then one thread you can break, but if you do two threads, three threads, then it starts to get strong. So if you just think about chipping away at something, like with our chanting, if you're overwhelmed with 16 rounds or with any rounds, then just say to your mind, okay, I know this is a lot to ask, but we're just going to do three mantras. Or, you know, start with something that's so tiny, but it just starts to get inertia on your side. Because what is that law? Bodies in motion tend to stay in motion, and bodies at rest tend to stay at rest. Something like that, right? Is it a law of thermodynamics?
No,
so can, no, all right. Newton's one of Newton's laws. So anyway, if we feel like overwhelmed, what we can do is try to do something tiny to move in the right direction, and oftentimes that will get us going in the right direction. So, yeah.
You know, that actually goes right along with goal setting. Sometimes we have to set makeable goals. Because if we don't have a makeable goal, things come up in our life that interrupt us, right? And then that's when we get off the track, and then suddenly the soda problem comes down. So if you have makeable goals, I was like, they do this like in sports. People try and get up to their anaerobic threshold, right? And your heart rate beats. After a certain beats, you start going from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism. And initially, when when you begin to practice, your heart gets up to, like, depending on your age, say 140 or over 140. At that point, you start getting anaerobic, and your heart's not getting enough oxygen. But if you gradually come up day after day to a certain point, you reach that heart rate, and you keep it at that heart rate, gradually you can keep raising the bar, and your heart will get stronger and still be getting oxygenated. And that way, you get people like these endurance runners or these cyclists that can maintain a real high heart rate for a long period of time. If you tried to do that right away, you could actually go into fibrillation and die. And so you have to gradually, you know, set the bar and then come up to that. And you set it in a way that, with anticipation of all the external influences that we have in our life, our family, our jobs, all the things that come up that can interrupt our sadhana. So we have to set a goal with all those in mind, anticipating what could stop us. What are the things that are going to interrupt us? And then set our goal there and stay steady there. And then we can actually gradually increase.
Like incremental improvement. They put, let's get some of these things down. Like drops a day, we're stone away. Incremental improvement, and the thing that Satyadev said about goals, you can put up by the goal.
Makeable goals.
Yeah, so it's
achievable.
Achievable goals.
Goals. That's a great. Weight Watcher leaders, she always gives this example about this lady in LA. She joined the Weight Watcher, and she had to lose over 120 pounds. Huh. And she said, I'm just here, you just tell me what I should be eating and what I shouldn't be eating. Don't even ask me about exercise. <Yeah. laughs> How about we walk with me until, you know, I get that paperwork for you. So she walks 27. And then she also walks back with me to the weighing machine. So she walks 43 steps. So she said, oh, see, you did it. Can you do this? And she said, okay, I'll do it. So, okay, try for 1 week. And then she tried for 1 week. Then she tried 40 steps next week and 80 steps. And she started around the block. And actually she ended up running the marathon for LA.
Haribo. There you go. Nice. Good example.
So it's not just a 12-step program.
So under effort, put drops a day, wear stone away. Drops a day, wear stone away.
I want to read this verse from Brahma Samhita. Kind of reinforce the
verse.
The highest devotion is attained by slow degrees. By the method of constant endeavors of self-realization, with the help of scriptural evidence,
holistic
conduct, and perseverance in practice.
Nice. And your point?
No, W-E-E-R.
My point is the highest devotion is attained by slow degrees.
If slow degrees.
Too fast.
Yeah.
Stone.
Yeah, the best thing to do is act in from the position we're at now. You know, we can't jump up and try to be Hari Das Thakur. If we do properly what we can do now, then we'll get more. Then we'll be able to achieve more the next time. And that's the beauty of it, because, you know, little incremental improvements every day. If you get your, you know, just find your seat one day or 1 week. And then the next day, make a determination. Well, I can't chant. My mind's too agitated, but I'm just going to sit on my seat and say my sankalpa, like I'm, you know, I'm about to chant, but I won't chant anything. You know, ease into it by slow degrees it'll work. And then you'll feel comfortable that, okay, I was able to do my sankalpa, I achieved something today, that's something I didn't do yesterday. And then take the big challenge, I'm going to chant one round with full concentration. Try that, and practice that for a month. Or a year, whatever it takes, until you get that down. So I've mastered one round without letting my mind deviate. And then go to two rounds. And then by slow degrees. There's not a race, because, you know, we try to race into it, and we're doing more than we can, then like the soda bottle, it'll come back down again. So take what you can do now and push yourself a little bit by increments every day. Try to achieve better. A little better result the next day. A little bit, not a whole bunch. Don't be Hari Das Thakur the next day. Just find something to do a little bit better than you did the day before, and tiny, tiny bits. And then gradually, then you'll feel your own momentum. Because Prabhupada said, anything done artificially will not achieve the result. So you have to do it for real, and it has to come from your own effort, your own practice. So what do we have so far? Goal setting and follow. where there's a will, there is a way, unshakable vow, achievable goals, under effort, we have practice and detachment, drop to date, we're stone away. Are we missing any sutras here, Srivas? Yes.
I attended one Japa seminar as well as from Malati, probably, from Rompatsa Maharaj in Detroit. And there is like a lot of questions asked, and he focused that, Malati Prabhu also said that, so there are a lot of anarthas within us, so we cannot really focus to correct everything. Better try to focus one thing. And he gave the simple formula that if you early to bed, that will solve a lot of your anarthas, and if you do chanting, so that make the vow that you get up early and do your chanting, then take one item of anartha, let's say I wanted to curb my lust, I wanted to curb my anger, whatever it is, and try to thrive for it. It may take 2 years or 5 years to do only one item. It's not possible to take 20 items in my things and do nothing. Rather take one, so automatically everything will follow.
Hmm. Nice.
So I don't know what sutra will be.
One thing is, for under effort, go to bed early. Go to bed early, because that's one of the, when you go to bed early, you get better rest, and you also are willing to get up early.
No, just go to bed, wake up early.
Well, we're taking it a step at a time, you know. Early to bed, early to rise. That's right. Yeah. Association, yeah. Get good association. That definitely comes under effort, yeah.
Well, we should have faith in the method or faith in the name, because it's tried and true. We know it works. So life, we always have obstacles. Life is always like this. But if you really have faith in the name, then it's the means and the end. So
develop faith in the name. That's a good one.
Determination, probably. Have faith in the...
Okay, put it under determination. Develop faith in the name. Srivas, you were going to say?
I wanted to mention never through prayer. And then, that I will never give up no matter how many times I fall down by my own sense of prayerful mood, praying for the help of the Lord. And at the same time, making sure that he helps me to give the determination. If there are setbacks, yes, I need to correct them. But never give up.
Never give up. Okay, good.
Try again.
When we set all these goals,
these are all Benjamin Franklin already said.
Try again. Try and try again.
Yes,
effort, okay. And also one is about failure is the pillar to success. That's very important for practice because, you know, it's not that the times that we don't make it aren't valuable. My piano teacher used to say, you know, oh, wait, you've made a valuable mistake. That was one of his things that he used to say, and I always remember that, the valuable mistake. And so if we take whatever times that, you know, we don't make it to the market and we note them and we try to consider why we didn't make them, it can become valuable in our practice. So failure is the pillar to success. And that's about all time we have for today. It's just... all the room we have. But these are just some ideas. You can meditate on these, but take one or two ideas from here. And then by incremental process, develop determination, and try to increase your effort tiny bit, by slow degrees. And focus it on japa, because the japa chanting is the most important aspect of our own spiritual practice. You'll get the most result. You know those things where you say, the 20% effort that gets the 80% result, and then there's the 80% that gets the 20%. Well, the Pareto principle, the 80-20 principle. Alfredo Pareto said that. And so, you know, if you put effort into chanting japa and perfecting your japa and doing better, then you'll find the 80%, actually 180% result. From that chanting. So that's the main watering process. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called it Shravanadi Jal, that it's the watering the root of the creeper by hearing, especially chanting like that. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Harinam Prabhu ki jai. Gopri Manandi Hari Hari Go.